Thank you. I'd first like to thank the organizers of the workshop for inviting me to speak on this topic. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I greatly appreciate their support. The first thing I want to mention is that this is a fairly long title, and so most of my time is going to be spent unpacking various different things in the title and explaining what they mean. But I could have easily sort of maybe titled it something like, let's see if it will actually progress to the next slide. There we go. How much is enough? Because one of the big problems that I've run into in looking at these questions is trying to figure out, when do I have enough of the various different things I need to describe the objects I'm interested in? And that's been one sort of the central problems that's involved here. This is all motivated by trying to understand something that came out of Michael Hartley's thesis, which was the following theorem. The theorem says that any abstract polytope can be represented as a quotient of a regular abstract polytope. And so a lot of my motivation is trying to understand how exactly do those quotients work, how are they built up, and how do we understand them. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time briefly reviewing some of the things that were mentioned earlier about what exactly is an abstract polytope. I know that there are a lot of graph theorists in the audience, and you may have forgotten things from this morning. So let me briefly just state, abstract polytopes are partially ordered sets, and the properties that we're interested about for these partially ordered sets are the ones that are common to the face lattices of convex polytopes. So in particular, what we're interested in is those partially ordered sets where we have a least face and a greatest face. Every maximal chain, which we call flags, have the same number of things in them. They're strongly connected. That means that you can get between any two things in there via containment relations, okay? And that property is preserved even when you look at sections of the poset, so the set of things between two elements. And then finally, that they satisfy the diamond condition. The diamond condition says that when you have things separated by two ranks, there's only exactly two things that are between them. And these are the defining conditions for abstract polytopes. Now, the thing that's particularly nice is the regular abstract polytopes, and here they're defined by flag transitivity, flags again being those maximal chains. In the case of polyhedra, you can think of that as a vertex, an edge, and a face, and so you get a little wavy flag. The automorphism groups here are really interesting. They're these things called string C groups. They're closely related to Coxeter groups. In fact, they're basically Coxeter groups that have string diagrams with a few additional relations, commonly. And the really magical thing, the thing that has made regular abstract polytopes such a productive area of research, is that there's a one-to-one correspondence. To every string C group, there corresponds a regular abstract polytope and vice versa. And there's a very nice construction for moving back and forth between those two things. Now, most of the theory of abstract polytopes has been focusing on the regular case. And what I'm actually more interested in is the case where we're looking at things that aren't regular. And so to get into that, we need to talk a little bit about some of the fundamentals of Hartley's representation. So there's a flag action of a string C group on a polytope. And so if you have a string C group, gamma, it's going to have some number of generators. Here I'm only looking at the case where we're talking about a polyhedron, so there's three generators. And the generators act in a particular way. So for example, this generator C exchanges on this flag here which face is on that flag. And correspondingly, B exchanges which edge is on the flag, and finally A exchanges which vertex is on the flag, okay? And so that's the flag action. Now, the flag action is independent of the symmetries, okay? And that's part of what makes analyzing things here a little bit complicated. Now, Hartley's quotient representation works roughly in the following way. You have a string C group with a well-defined flag action on the polytope that you're interested in modeling. To that string C group is associated a regular abstract polytope, and essentially what you're going to do is you're going to identify flags in the regular abstract polytope that are in the same orbits under the action of that subgroup. Now, not just any subgroup will do. You have to be very careful about which subgroups you pick, and if you're trying to model a particular polytope, what ends up turning out to work is the stabilizer of a pick any flag in your polytope, the stabilizer under the flag action will be the appropriate N to choose for this quotient. And this raises some questions, though, and we'll be exploring this in a little bit more depth in a second. How do you know when you have enough to generate N? Okay, that's back to my how do you know you have enough question. Let me give you a picture of what this looks like. Here we have on the left the regular abstract polytope 6-3 sub 2-2. It's a bunch of hexagons meeting 3 at a vertex. It's a torus using these vectors to form the identifications. And it turns out this is a regular cover for the tetrahedron. When you look at how that cover works, what we end up seeing is, so for example here, you see these two sort of lavender faces. They end up getting sent to that lavender face on the right. So anytime you have a hexagon over here on the right, it comes from two hexagons of the same color on the left. Additionally, if we look, for example, at that lighter purple triangle, there it goes. It takes a single hexagon to cover one of these triangles, and what we end up seeing there is that each flag gets covered twice in this kind of a covering relationship. Right. Okay, so how to do this in terms of the group theory, and in particular, what we're interested in is we'd like to have a small cover. There are lots of possible covers that one can use. We'd like to have a small one. So what you start with is you start with a universal cover. So in this case, we're looking at a universal cover corresponding to a hyperbolic tiling, typically. All right? And what I mean here is, so we've got a polytope that's a universal polytope with faces who's the least common multiple of the faces of the ones that you're interested in terms of the number of sides, and whose the degree here is the least common multiple of the degrees of the polytope that you're trying to model. And up here we have, again, our generators A, B, and C, swap vertex, swap edge, swap face, with the relationships, with these as being generating relationships. Okay, so then what we can do is we can construct the subgroup N by looking at how these act on the faces and the vertices of the polytope. And in general, this works pretty well, but when we go to this step, which is to try to identify a regular cover for our polytope Q, in the case of the polyhedra, it turns out that this is going to be that gamma modded out by the largest normal subgroup of N in gamma. The difficulty is that doesn't turn out to always correspond to a polytope. That's not always a string C group. And that adds a layer of difficulty. But in the case of polyhedra, that works out. Okay, so here's, again, back to that example of the truncated tetrahedron, just to give you an idea of what I meant by looking at the faces and the vertices. If you consider I advanced by accident. So if we look at the flag starting down here at this position with the vertex here, an edge and a face, as we apply the exchange maps to go around that face, well, eventually we get back to where we started again, and that gives us that stabilizer AB cubed. Okay. It turns out in this particular case, it only takes three generators to generate the stabilizer subgroup of that flag. But interestingly, for example, it makes some sense that we wouldn't need the ones for the hexagons, but that we don't need this one here is kind of interesting, that you don't always need everything that's in sight. And here again, if you do exactly this process, you find that when you construct this largest normal subgroup in N of gamma, that the polytope that corresponds to this string C group is the one that over there is 6-3 sub 2-2. So when we're trying to figure out the generators for our stabilizer subgroups, there's a bunch of problems we have to overcome. The first is, how do we know when we have enough generators? That's not always obvious. The second problem that we run into is that there are generating sets for flag stabilizers that you just can't always verify by brute force. So in the early work that I did with Michael, a lot of our time was spent modeling things in GAP. We'd throw in a bunch of generators derived in that kind of way, and then we'd say, okay, GAP, tell me, do I have a polytope? Is it the polytope I want? If it was, we'd put our thumbs in the air and do a little happy dance, and otherwise we'd have to go back and do some more work. But if, for example, you're interested in, say, modeling a uniform tiling of the plane, this doesn't work. Why? There aren't finitely many faces to look at, and so that makes the problem much harder. And then another thing that we're interested in is, I mentioned earlier, we want small, so we'd like to have the smallest possible regular cover as our goal here, and generating the appropriate structure for that. Verifying, for example, that you've found everything in the core, verifying that you've got that right structure can be a complicated operation. So I want to talk a little bit about the ways in which looking at words corresponds to walks in the flag graph and those loops. One nice result is that if you look at if the flag graph of your polytope is planar, then that stabilizer subgroup is going to be generated by walks determined by the emitted edges of a spanning tree. So here we have, for example, in the lighter gray, the graph of the 5 prism. Okay, superimposed on that, we have the flag graph, and the edges are colored by which of those exchange maps connects the adjacent flags. And here, now I've made some of the edges bolder, we have a spanning tree rooted at that blue vertex up there. So that is the group, that's the vertex of the flag graph, so that's the flag that we're constructing the stabilizer for. And when we do that, because of this theorem, that means that, for example, if we look at just this edge, we take a walk through the flag graph to one end of the edge, cross the edge, and back again, that gives us one of the generators that we need to generate the subgroup. And if we do that for each of the admitted edges, that's enough. Here's another example edge. Walk out through the tree, over the edge, and then back again through the tree. One consequence of this is that if you have a finite polytope, then the number of generators you need for the stabilizer subgroup, that's a finite number. That's good. We like that. In fact, it's going to be bounded above by the number of edges in the flag graph minus the number of flags plus one, because number of flags minus one is going to be what it takes to construct a tree. So that's not very deep. But one of the things that's nice is it turns out we can actually typically do better. And that brings us to this result. If the flag graph is a finite planar graph, then the stabilizer subgroup has a set of generators corresponding to one walk per each face or vertex of the polyhedron. So again, looking at this example, and again looking at that last walk, it turns out it's equivalent to the walk that you get by starting at that vertex, going out to this face, around this face, and back. The remaining ones that are colored in pink, which you could suitably order to construct words where the product of them would give you that complete walk, or something equivalent to that complete walk, they all turn out to be trivial in the covering group, and so they're not necessary. Okay? And so, in fact, it turns out, in this particular instance, we just need the ones for these faces. We can actually demonstrate in the case of the prisms and the antiprisms that we can do it with one fewer than the number of faces in terms of the number of generators that are necessary to generate that stabilizer subgroup. Now, when I'm talking about these kinds of things, I often find it useful to talk a little bit about these as being lollipops. So you have a walk through the spanning tree, out to the face, around the tree, and back again, and the stem of your lollipop is that walk through the tree. And unfortunately, there is one small defect, I think, from a theoretical standpoint in the structure of this proof, and it's the following. The proof requires that these generators that are mentioned here in the statement of the theorem all share their lollipop stems lying in a tree. And it would be interesting to know whether or not any old set of walks out to a face, around a face, and back again, or any walk to a vertex out and back again, without that requirement of them lying on the same tree, is necessary for doing this? I don't know the answer to that question. I wanted to skip those two. All right, so minimal covers. So if we have an abstract polytope, what do we mean by minimal? What we mean essentially is it's the smallest one available. And one way of getting at that idea is a definition like this one, where if you are in the situation where you've got a polytope, you've got a regular cover and another regular cover, that where one covers the other, then the only way that that can happen is if these are the same one. Okay? It wasn't stated very well, I'm sorry. Essentially, anytime you've got a regular cover that also covers your polytope, and your regular cover covers another regular cover, but the only way that happens is if they're the same thing. So one of the consequences of thinking about the definition in this way, and I don't think I've articulated this very well at this particular moment, unfortunately, is the following. Minimal covers need not be unique. And there's actually some joint work with Barry Monson and Daniel Pellicer where we discussed this example called the tomotope, where precisely this problem happens. There's infinitely many minimal covers for that polytope. Everything has a regular cover, so does there necessarily have to be a minimal? Barry? What's your thought? I think the answer is yes, but I'm jet lagged enough, I'm not sure. Right. Right. Okay, all right, never mind. Good question. I wish I had a better answer for you at the moment. All right, so one of the things that is nice about these minimal covers is it turns out that if, and this is a big if gamma mod core correspond is a string C, okay, so it corresponds to a regular polytope, then that is a minimal cover, okay? In fact, it's the unique minimal cover in that situation. The problem is it's precisely this thing that doesn't always turn out to be true, that gamma mod core is string C. And so that's where you run into difficulty. The second nice thing is that every polyhedron emits a minimal cover of this form. So in the rank 3 case, things turn out to work out really, really well. And so that sort of leads us to what is the approach when you're trying to do this kind of thing for, say, the prisms and the antiprisms. Here we're working with an infinite family, so again, brute forcing stuff only gets you so far. And so the first thing is we need to be able to describe what the finite generating sets are going to be for the stabilizer subgroup for each of the prisms. And then we need to be able to verify, well, so it turns out, and here's something that's really quite nice in the case of the prisms and the antiprisms, this is something we conjectured a while back, is that there's exactly one additional relation required for the string C groups. And so what we end up having to do is verify that if you look at all the elements in N, and that's easier to do once you have this finite generating set, that all the ones that act trivially on all flags have to lie in the normal closure of just a single element. And so in other words, that the closure of that element is the core. And so if we look at the minimal covers, here's the minimal regular cover for the prism, here's the minimal regular cover for the antiprism. These last two relations here, the only additional relations required, if you remove the yellow ones, we get the universal covers for the prisms and the antiprisms. Okay, so if you delete those, what you're looking at is the universal cover for the corresponding prism or antiprism. one of the other things that turns out to happen here is because of this sort of least common multiple business, you end up with the same universal, I mean, the same minimal cover for multiple prisms and antiprisms. So, for example, the minimal cover of the 5 prism is the same as the minimal cover of the 10 and the 20 prism, but not the 40. One aspect of this that we're still exploring and still working on is the topological structure of these minimal covers. If you look at the 3 prism, for example, it turns out to be covered by a torus with 28 holes. The 7 prism, a torus with 540 holes. I don't have a good explanation for why those numbers or why it's that structure, but that seems to be what we have. Isabel's giving me a crossed eyebrow. I'm going to have to answer later questions for, I'm sure. But this leads to some questions that I would like to see answered. I already mentioned this one about, do all of the face and vertex walks have to share stems? But there's also some other problems. All the cases where I know how things work, I'm talking about cases where the flag graph is planar and finite. And I don't have any idea what you would do to fix things if you're talking about a polytope of projective type or a polytope of toroidal type, which isn't usually spelled that way. And I also don't know what you'd do about the situation with higher rank. Higher rank, I think, is going to be a much more complicated problem. And that essentially is what I have to say. Winnie Wolfe asks.